So, about a month ago on Valentine's Day, I gave a talk on anger. No deeper meaning there, that just happened to be the date. And so I thought what I'd do this time is talk about patience, which is the antidote to anger. And then I realized in preparing this that I was getting pretty excited about it. And so what I'm going to do going forward is to take all three of the root defilements, so anger representing hatred, and then desire and ignorance or delusion, and all of their antidotes. So it'll sort of turn into a six session series. So this is the second of six. Getting some thumbs up. Excellent. So antidote. In our tradition, we think of greed, hatred, and delusion as being the three fires. But in the Mahayana tradition, they use the analogy of three poisons. And this word antidote comes out of that, three poisons. So they like poison, they go throughout our entire system, and they cause harm. So the idea of an antidote is that you take another substance that counteracts the effect of that poison. So if you think of that in health terms, you take a poison, you take the antidote, and it counteracts the effects of the poison. It doesn't necessarily mean that you're back to your normal level of activity, right? I mean, you've saved your life, but maybe not much more. And in this practice, the baseline first default when any unhelpful mind state arises is to be aware of it. That's the gold standard because we practice to know and understand our patterns. So applying an antidote is useful. It's certainly something that we need to have access to and know how it works. But I think of it as first aid, that this is not going to uproot these defilements, which is the ultimate goal of our practice, right? To get to a point where our default setting is loving kindness and compassion and all of these mind states that we're striving for. And eventually, as we get free from our old habits, those become the default. It's a very high bar, but we first need to start with the basics, and the basics are the ability to know which antidotes work for which unskillful mind states and how they work. So that's what we'll start with today as an antidote. And the full title of my talk was Patience, Antidote, and Perfection. So we'll move on to talk about patience as something that we actually cultivate and attempt to perfect as a little bit higher bar. So at times in this, what Tony Bernhardt calls the 2,600-year-old game of telephone, bringing from whatever language the Buddha spoke to Pali, where it was written down, to English, often in that process, words get sort of twisted around. So sometimes the same word means two different things. At other times, different words mean the same thing. So often, these unskillful mind states like anger, the antidote is given as non-anger. Antidote to anger, opposite of anger, non-anger. Well, what's non-anger? And to illustrate this point, the Buddha told a pretty funny story. I'm going to have to use this phone. You know, I'm pretty patient with people, but I'm extremely impatient with devices. And it really came back to bite me this week. I have the middle-length discourses, which, as you know, probably knows a book about that thick. I have it here. I purchased an electronic version of it, but it won't show up on any larger device than this. So I have a a very big book on a very small screen. Let's hope I can read it. So this is from the Samana Mandika Sutta, and it's a really kind of interesting story. So there was a person named Ugahamana. He was a carpenter, and he came to the Buddha. And Ugahamana was this other teacher, and Panchakanga, who was the carpenter, had a question about practice. But he was a little bit, it wasn't the right time of day to talk to the Buddha, so he went to this other teacher, to Ugahamana, and he asked his question. And the lead up to this is pretty funny, but I'm not going to get into all the details. So he went to the wanderer and exchanged greetings with him. When this courteous and amiable talk was finished, he sat down at one side. The wanderer, Ugahamana, then said to him, "Carpenter, when a man possesses four qualities, I describe him as accomplished in what is wholesome, perfected in what is wholesome, an ascetic, invincible, attained to the supreme attainment." In other words, this would be freedom, right? The supreme attainment. When I want it to switch, it doesn't, but anyway. He does no evil bodily actions. He utters no evil speech. He has no evil intentions, and he does not make his living by any evil livelihood. When a man possesses these four qualities, I describe him as accomplishing what is wholesome, perfected in what is wholesome, an ascetic, invincible, attained to the supreme attainment. So Panchakanga wasn't too sure about this answer. So without either approving or disapproving of the answer, he rose from his seat and went away thinking, "I'm going to ask the Buddha about this answer because I'm not too sure about this." So he goes back. It was now the appropriate time to ask the Buddha. And the Buddha said, "If that were so, carpenter, then a young, tender infant lying prone is accomplished in what is wholesome, perfected in what is wholesome, an ascetic, invincible, attained to the supreme attainment," according to the wanderer's Ugahamana's statement. So all of the qualities that Ugahamana described were not doing something, non-anger, not doing a livelihood that's harmful, not doing this, not doing that. This is Bhikkhu Bodhi's translation, a young, tender infant lying prone. For those of you that know Thanissaro Bhikkhu, that does all the translations on Access to Insight, his phrase is a little bit catchier. He calls it the stupid baby boy. I just can't quite picture the Buddha saying that, so I'm using Bhikkhu Bodhi's. The stupid baby boy lying on his back is not going to do an unwholesome livelihood, right? And he's not going to do all of these things. So I think that kind of points to the fact that it's not a very high bar to not do things, right? It's let's think of it as in logical terms, it's necessary but not sufficient, right? It's necessary not to be doing bad things, but it's not sufficient. It's not going to develop the qualities that we want, and it's certainly not going to help us understand the nature of anger. Only awarenesses and wisdom are going to be able to do that. So the Dalai Lama writes, "The only factor that can give refuge or protection from the destructive effects of anger and hatred is a practice of tolerance and patience." So this is a bit higher bar, right? Refuge and protection. So we're not just having non-anger. We're not just refraining from doing things. We're actually finding a place of safety that we can operate from, refuge and a protection. So if we think of taking refuge in the sense that sometimes is formally done in this practice, where we actually take a vow, if you will, in the Buddha, the Dhamma, and the Sangha, in the Buddha, his teachings, and the community of practitioners. That is a positive commitment on our part, much more than just saying, well, I won't do bad things, right? You're actually committing to something. You're actually setting an intention. And as we know, setting an intention can establish a momentum that can lead to really good things. It can lead to positive behaviors. It can lead to overcoming difficulties, setting that intention. So this idea of tolerance and patience being a refuge is a little bit farther along the path. Then we get to patience as one of the perfections. So in Pali, this word is parami, and those of you, the English that we use in our tradition is paramis. We just use the plural. In the Mahayana tradition, you'll hear them referred to as paramita. In our tradition, we have 10 of them, and these are the qualities of mind that we need to perfect if we're going to be free. The Jataka tales, which are those really colorful tales with tigers and lions and pirates and all of that stuff, they're meant to be told as stories of how the Buddha lived his previous lives. When he was a bodhisattva, he had the intention to become a Buddha, but he wasn't quite there. So in every one of those, he messes up. But each one of them, he learns a little bit more about each of these perfections. That's what they're all about, each one of them. Steve Armstrong has this brilliant way of describing the paramis, and you can come up and look at this afterwards. Every time I give a talk on one of the paramis, I'm going to bring this poster, and I brought it in several times before. May not have noticed it, but he frames the paramis as 10 spiritual practices of letting go. So each one of these is a form of letting go. So generosity, letting go of a tangible thing as a way to let go of the tension caused by grasping to it. Very nice. So all 10 of them are here. Patience in the Vipassana list is 6th out of the 10. And it says, letting go of expectations and that things need to be done my way. So that's patience. So I tried to bring a little bit of that feeling into the meditation. Going into a meditation without any expectations, without expecting that it'll go a certain way. So we're way beyond just non-anger, right? We're actually trying to cultivate something here. So perfection, the perfections of paramis are about actually cultivating certain qualities, cultivating and developing certain qualities. So Steve says that Kanti means, Kanti is the Pali word for patience and a lot of other things. So he says it means forbearance, patience, and forgiveness with additional connotations of tolerance, gentleness, docility, and tractability. Tractability is the openness to learning. That's what that means. It means we're able to be taught. Gave a talk one time on the Mahamangala Sutta, and sometimes in some of the translations it says one of the greatest Mahamangala or the greatest blessings, and so one of the greatest blessings or protections is obedience. And well, it turns out that word is actually tractability, the ability to learn, ability to listen to a teaching and learn from it. It's not obedience like, oh yeah, you said that, so I'm going to do it without thinking about it. So it's tractability. So again, we're raising the bar. Now, Sylvia Borstein has this wonderful quote. Oh, no, by the way, speaking of technical glitches, so your handout is right here. So if any of you have a USB device, I can transmit it to you directly, a direct transmission. Other than that, what's going to have to happen is that our wonderful web wizard here, Sabitri, is going to have to get this by email from me tonight and post it with the, we hope, recording. I see a hand up. I see a thumb up. Yay! We hope recording of this talk, the anger one didn't get recorded. That's why we're kind of joking around about that. The handout from that last talk will be up there, and then this one will be here. And it's 2 pages of quotes about patience. This one's awesome. Sylvia Boorstein. This is about practicing. This is from her book, Pay Attention for Goodness Sakes, which if you've read the book, you may not have realized it's about the paramis. That's what it's about. Practicing the perfections of the heart is the subtitle. Sylvia, with her typical dry humor. No one needs to especially devise situations in which to cultivate patience. They present themselves freely. I think we can all relate to that. So, Michael and Jerry and I last year took a 10-month course from Kamala and Steve about the paramis. That's what the whole course was about. 10 months, 10 paramis. Practice with each of them for a month. And I'd worked with him before. Steve very generously gave us all of his materials on the paramis, and I don't know how many of you remember about, 8, 9 years ago, Sandra Sigrist taught an ongoing course on these. Every week is when we met every other week, and she'd do the in-between week. It was really a great thing. And so I sort of had a basic understanding of what each of them was. What I learned from the course is the way that they interact, that each one supports the other and interacts with them, kind of synergy. So I started thinking about patience and how does it interact with the other paramis? So the other paramis are generosity, dana, virtue, or Steve will translate it as integrity, which is sila, which I think some of you are familiar with that. Renunciation, not the most popular one on the list, but actually when you get into it, renunciation actually is quite a joyful thing. Nekama, wisdom, which is panya. It's on almost every list there is out there, right? Energy or persevering effort, which is virya. Patience, kanti. Truthfulness, satya. Could sure use some of that these days. Resolve, which is aditana, which is that. That's what the Buddha had when he sat under the tree and says, I'm not getting up from here until I'm enlightened. You know, that attitude of just sticking with it. Loving kindness and equanimity, the two of the four Brahma Viharas, metta and upekkha. So the first one that occurred to me actually was resolve, aditana. Patience has this quality of being okay with the way things are. It's that forbearance meaning. Where we're willing to put up with the way things are because, first of all, we know we can't change them. But second of all, beyond that, it's an attitude that we can actually learn from this situation. You know, being in a situation where we're so antsy to get in what we want to say that we're not listening to what the other person's saying and then have a subsequent, I'm speaking from experience here, having a subsequent misunderstanding because we didn't hear the person, even though they said it very clearly, that's sort of that version of impatience can be overcome by the willingness to just be with whatever's happening, whether it's pleasant or not. And that's kind of the forbearance meaning of patience. So, the other one actually is that it takes energy. We tend to think of patience as being passive or weak or, in some cases, just spaced out, you know. John Travis uses the analogy that patience in the Buddhist sense is not the cat waiting at the mouse hole. It's accepting whatever's happening as being, that's what's happening right now. That's what I want to pay attention to. So the cat waiting at the mouse hole is expecting a certain result, right? The mouse is going to come out, it's going to have lunch. But the patience that we need to cultivate is one that can be with whatever's going on and being okay with that. And then actually willing to learn from that, which is, as I mentioned before, one of the aspects of Kanti that plays into this. In addition to energy and resolve, we really do need to exercise renunciation, this idea of nekama. Renunciation as a perfection is this idea, actually another way of thinking of it is simplification. It's sort of being willing to let go of all the options, having every option. I mean, I know that's difficult to do in this society where, you know, we just love walking down the aisle and having 47 varieties of cereal available to us to choose from. But at some point, letting go of some of the options is okay, you know. Knowing that the road not taken, you know, might have been a great experience, but that was the road not taken, you know. And it's fine. It's okay that we didn't take that road because we're on this road. And it's the only road we're on. So sort of keeping one's options open to everything can be very draining of energy. This is the way these things interact. It can be very draining of our energy. It can also make us very impatient because if we don't like what's happening in this option, again, speaking from experience here, what the mind tends to do is, oh, well, let me try that other option. So we're never quite satisfied with where we've ended up, you know, because we're always, oh, well, there's another option. Why don't I try that? You know, you can think of this in the microcosm in your sitting. You know, you're sitting there and you're experiencing some kind of sensation in the body. It's like, oh, I don't want to be there. You know, let my thoughts go to what I'm going to have for lunch tomorrow. You know, that sort of thing. Or let my mind go to, you know, that appointment that I have this afternoon with a dear friend. You know, the mind just doesn't want to be here. It wants to be considering all of the other options. Renunciation is a willingness to let go of having all the options. Okay? And, you know, I'm not saying that once we choose an option, we have to stay with that forever. That's not wisdom. But it's the willingness to actually be with what's happening now and not always be sort of jumping around searching for something better. So those were, maybe you'll have other ideas when we open the floor up here in a little bit, but those were my main, the ones that resonated with me. And of course, kindness. I mean, all of, you know, they say that metta underlies all of the paramis because we need to have kindness toward ourselves and others to be able to practice any of them. So particularly with patience, if we're not going to have an expectation, then we need to have some version of kindness for us because we're going to endure some stuff that isn't very pleasant. That's the forbearance aspect. We're going to endure some things that aren't very pleasant. If we're willing to be with the way things are in the present moment, then inevitably there's going to be some things that happen that we're not going to be particularly pleased about. And it may require some kindness for us to actually stay there. So Steve has, in his, what he calls his practical parami exercises that he gave us the permission to use, he talks about three kind of general areas of life where impatience shows up. And I don't think I'm talking out of school because I think many of you have heard him say this, but Steve will say when he talks about patience that he doesn't have the patience gene. He talks about the area of pain or an ordinary personal form of suffering, like being in a hurry, being attacked or criticized, putting up with others' incompetence, that sort of thing. So that's what we might think of as just plain old dukkha, right? The first noble truth, that there is suffering. That's just the way things are. The second one is actually very subtle. It's the inability to further your dharma aspirations. So this idea of patience applies not only to our day-to-day interactions with people, the kind of things that Sylvia was talking about. Don't worry, you don't need to make up ways of practicing patience. They'll present themselves freely, and that's usually in our actions with others, interactions with others, right? So that's a sort of ordinary personal ways that we may need to practice patience. But when we talk about expectations coming into the practice, that can be, you know, expecting something to happen on the cushion during a 40-minute sit like we just had, or that could be the whole arc of our practice. Oh, I want to accomplish X, Y, and Z in my practice. The tighter that we cling to that, the harder it's going to be to actually achieve it. And that's this aspect of patience that allows us to just accept our practice as it is, to begin where we are, wherever we are, just to begin there and move on from there. Some of the examples Steve gives are, oh, I don't have time to sit. Oh, I don't have enough money to do a retreat. Oh, just I have no concentration today. Oh, where am I going to find a teacher? That sort of thing. So those are all signals that there's some sort of impatience with your practice happening, that you're not willing to accept the conditions of your practice as they are right now. And then the more profound level of impatience is just impatience with the way things are, with the truth or the ultimate Dhamma. And these are can be thought of as struggling with any of the three characteristics. So in this practice, we think of, when we do our meditation, there are these qualities, things that come and go, like the rhythm of the breath, the temperature, and all of that. But there are also characteristics which are more enduring. They're sort of inherent in the experience, in all experience. And the first one is anicca, or impermanence, changeability, decay, or death. The second one is dukkha, pain and suffering, insecurity, vulnerability, oppression. And the third is anatta, which is just the ephemerality, is the word that he uses, insubstantiality. And we talk in here often about the conditionality of experience, that nothing exists on its own in a vacuum, right? Everything is sort of contingent. Everything is connected to everything else. Everything is the result of causes and conditions. When we're struggling with any one of those, and at some point in our practice, we're going to struggle with all of them, or we're not really practicing, because they aren't necessarily intuitive. They're somewhat counterintuitive to the way that our minds have been structured in our evolutionary biology. And we have to sort of believe that we're going to be here tomorrow, you know, just to get up in the morning and get going. But the reality of these three things can be quite destabilizing, coming face to face with them. And when that happens, we need to have the patience to actually be with the way things are, and not just sort of shove them off and ignore them and revert to the old habits of seeing things the way we want to see them instead of the way they really are. So some reflections that Steve recommends in for all three of these levels of impatience. The first is, this too will change. I've been through this before. The second is, I cannot escape or deny the first noble truth, the inevitability of suffering. And the third is, these conditions are out of my control. All I can do is tolerate them and be aware of my response to them. So again, circling around back to awareness as the default strategy that we always want to try to use in these cases. So when anger arises, being aware that we're angry is going to help. Doesn't always mean that we're going to be able to succeed from expressing that or harming ourselves and others, but the first step is always going to be awareness. So I'm going to close with a quote from a poet named Denis Saleh. I'm sorry, I don't know how to pronounce his name. S-A-L-E-H. Often we are discouraged by the enormity of a task, or the length of a journey and become impatient with the difficulties we face. We lose faith in ourselves. Patience reminds us that what is in front of us is just this moment, just this step, just this breath. Almost anything can be done if we proceed slowly enough. Comments, questions, complaints? Do you want to bring the mic around just so everybody can hear?
See, I'm losing my voice from this 35-mile wind the other day. I don't know if I understood you clearly, so I'll ask you because I don't know if I interpreted it. But how I thought you said was to be in the moment and to try to, instead of look at all my options, because that will make me, my word is scattered, to focus on what is, be with what is, and be with my feelings and just focus and feel what I'm feeling now. And that's what I've been trying to do. You know, sometimes I'm reactive, but I'm less reactive than I was. And what I wanted to ask you is, because sometimes when I focus on what is, sometimes I'm feeling pain. And then when they talked about doing the second arrow, you know, I feel myself, maybe I'm doing the second arrow. When it comes up when I'm meditating, feeling it again, and that's more pain. So I'm trying to divert myself how not to feel pain when I'm dealing with the present moment and the thoughts. And when anger arises, once in a while I get angry, but not as angry as I used to get. But I'm trying to figure out, you're saying you should use discernment, or the way you express yourself could be more tactful and say the same thing in a more gentle way. That's the second question.
So the first one, what we're not trying to do is not feel the pain. That's not where we're going with this. When I say awareness, what I mean is the actual physical awareness of the sensations in the body. How does anger express itself in the body? How does impatience express itself in the body? I mean, I think we all know that sort of jumpy, sort of leaning forward nature of impatience, right? You know, that's kind of how it feels. Whereas anger feels quite different, right? I mean, there's usually some heat. There's usually a lot of clenching. You know, for me, it's kind of upper chest, heart area, throat, you know, and we still may feel this impulse to kind of move forward, but generally it's in the form of striking out. Whereas impatience, we're just willing to go anywhere. Doesn't matter. So what I was trying to say about the options is that renunciation, you can think of it as the simplification of your life, the willingness to let go of some of the other options. And the scattered word is a great one, because the mind, when it thinks it has infinite options, is going to try to check all those out, at least in a greed person like myself, a person that has greed as the primary form of the three fires. The mind is always going to want to try every single one of those options. And that can just be debilitating. It can paralyze us because we have too many choices, or it can wear us out because we actually try to do every one of those things. Renunciation is the willingness to say, okay, here's who I am right now, and I'm just going to be with where it is right now. And okay, pain is present, but what's the nature of that pain? Now, for any of us, there's some level where the pain becomes too much to actually be with awareness, right? It could be overwhelming. And now at that point, that's where we would apply the antidote. Not to not feel the pain, but to try to feel something else. Whether that's kindness, whether that's non-pain. Remember that baseline that we established at the very beginning of the talk? There's anger, there's non-anger. Well, when there's pain in one part of the body, there is non-pain somewhere in the other part of the body. Whether that's neutral or whether it's pleasant, somewhere in the generally, with many conditions, there is some area of the body that is not in pain. So go there as an alternative. Be aware of that. Don't be suppressing, don't be using the energy of the mind to suppress the pain, whether it's mental or physical, but actually move to a place that where we can use awareness, but we're not sort of wrapping the mind around that pain, because that'll just make it worse. And now I've forgotten your second question.
So if I'm feeling pain, instead of hurting myself again, but when I'm meditating, I feel the pain again, mm-hmm. you know, the pain keeps coming, right. Then I could give metta to myself, like feel love towards myself in meditation.
Yeah. Yeah, the second arrow.
Is that what you mean?
Right. So rather than turning, you know, the unpleasantness of that pain back on oneself, and as you say, you know, causing yourself more harm, to actually use the ability to be aware of that pain and then say, but I'm not going to choose that right now. I'm going to choose kindness toward myself rather than choose self-blame or self-criticism or some of these other harmful mind states. I'm actually going to choose kindness in response to the pain. So there, we're still aware of the pain. We're still holding it in mind, but we're choosing to not let that trigger the old habit of self-criticism or, as you say, the second arrow. We're using that as an opportunity, as a reminder, oh, now I need to apply some kindness and compassion. Thank you for your question.
Thanks. Thanks, Rich. Good talk. So I relate very much to your discussion about the greed being the primary fire and the options. I feel like I'm always scanning the options. It makes me think of, you were talking about, you know, if you didn't take that road just to let it go. It made me think of Dennis and Diane both talked about doubt in the past few weeks, and I made that connection that sometimes I doubt if I made the right decision, I doubted if this is the right option, and it's really exhausting. So I think that's helpful if I can, we all, and I can just sort of settle that. I liked your advice to just accept that this is the path that we've taken. Thank you.
One thing that's helped me with patience is when I heard it said that a Dharma practitioner never waits. And so I try to apply that. Like if I'm in line for something, I'm not waiting, I'm practicing. And because I'm practicing and I'm not waiting, then the impatience tends to be less.
Thank you. Yeah, waiting. A cat waits at the mouse hole because there's a certain expectation and result that it wants. So yeah, that's a really good way to frame it. Thank you.
So seems to be the night to clear our throats on everything. So the last comment made me just brought to mind for me that I had an MRI this week done, and it was a pretty long one, and or a series of tests. And this idea of not waiting, because I could have easily gotten in there and just been spending the whole time going, get this over. And instead, last spring, some of us were in a listening class with Susan Orr. And so I applied that to while I was lying there. And it actually was just a fascinating time. And I won't quite say I enjoyed it, but it was getting over there. I mean, I was laying there thinking, like listening to all these sounds. It's incredibly noisy for anyone who's had one, you'll know. And but they were very distinct, different sounds. And you know, each one was some other rhythm or brought up some image of something. And it was quite fascinating when I was able to just be there with it and explore what I was experiencing, even vibrations in my body or, you know, just things like that. And the only time where it got uncomfortable is when I started focusing on me, like myself, like the idea of me laying there. And, you know, you're not supposed to move at all. So then I would start to laugh and I was like, okay, I can't go there. So, but if I just went back into the sound and listening to the sound, then I was able to just be there with it. And it didn't really feel like when she said it's going to be, the next one's going to be 6 minutes long, I wasn't just dreading it. You know, I just was like, okay, let's see what happens, you know. So it was really quite fascinating how much it shifted for me when I went, used my practice and was able to think of it that way.
Thank you.
Yeah, Rich, no, nice talk. Something that came to mind was the Suzuki Roshi quote about in the beginner's mind, there are many options, and in the expert's mind, there are few. And also, you know, listening to John talk about the multitude of options that the mind has, but the heart mind knows better. And thinking that at a certain level of practice, it becomes so embedded to relate to experience in a different way that this kind of constant scanning or constant analyzing of, we're talking about personal options here, not scanning for the best mortgage or something, but in terms of the way we live our lives, can really start to decrease and let that be a form of, or the consummation of a certain level of patience. Yeah.
Thank you.
Rich, I heard restraint as being one of the paramis. Is that patience? Is that the same? Or is restraint a renunciation?
I'm thinking it's probably more renunciation.
Although restraint is a better word, I think.
Yeah, restraint of being willing to not engage in something. Yeah.
Right, okay. Right. So, yeah, okay. And then following on Sarah's concept, I have to say that since I started practice, long distance flights are easier. Because like an MRI, I just listen and, you know, you just are there. There's no point in checking where the little plane is going.
Okay, well, there are either no more questions or the sugar crash has occurred, so let's close with a metta. I'm just recognizing that being with the way things are is simple but not easy. Being willing to let go of some options, simple but not easy. And as we try to practice patience, let's recognize that each moment of impatience is a moment of suffering, whether that's with a mundane daily situation or the arc of our practice or the ultimate realities and deep questions that we face as human beings. So just acknowledging that there is suffering, setting an intention to do whatever we can, starting with refraining from harmful behaviors and eventually moving on to cultivating these positive states of mind that ultimately can uproot these harmful habits. And in recognizing our own suffering, inevitably we recognize that just like us, all beings suffer and all beings want to be happy. So may we dedicate whatever positive energy we've generated here tonight by practicing together, by our conversations, by our recognition of service, by listening to the teachings and reflecting, sharing whatever positive energy we've generated in those activities. May it in some real way reduce the suffering of all beings. May all beings be safe and protected, peaceful and happy, as healthy and strong as their current circumstances allow. May all beings know the ease of well-being, and may all beings be free of suffering.